Rabbi Ruki. Good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning. Shana Tova.
Shana Tova v'metuka, how we say in Hebrew. I used to live in Israel for 4 years, and I'm so proud that I know how to say Shana Tova v'metuka. We just already talked today about Rosh Hashanah and about Jewish New Year. But just the people who don't belong to shul, to synagogue, to religion, we just can say it's a nice holiday. We celebrate our freedom. When I say we, I mean Jewish people. We eat apple and honey. I think it's just time when we are happy. But it's just from people who, like I said, original one. But person who belongs to rabbi like you, it's probably completely different vision. What is this Rosh Hashanah?
Well, I don't know, because for me, Rosh Hashanah, while it means the most holy day of the year and the introduction of the possibility that we are going to live again another year, I don't think that you have to be in any way attached to the dialogue of Judaism through synagogues, although Rosh Hashanah is the prime time to go to synagogue. If you were ever going to choose a time to go to synagogue, it would be on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, for sure, to support yourself, your community, and to get those prayers off the floor, rising right up to God, and to make sure that God hears, you know, what you have to say to him, and that you really are doing your teshuvah, your repentance. And I think that every person can do that. And I think that the sweetness that we bring into Rosh Hashanah mm-hmm. is really the sweetness of joy that we have this next year, that, you know, we, for the great privilege of being where we are now and being able to live mm-hmm. in the mystery and awe, we are rewarded with this sweetness of this gift for all the hard work that we do to be there.
Yeah. Thank you. Rocky, when you talk a couple days ago on the phone, we just found out that maybe you and I somehow connected, because my maiden name and your family name is the same.
Amazing, isn't it?
Amazing. I never heard that my maiden name, which is sound very... very seldom could listen this name, like Einbinder, and suddenly it's the first time in my life when I heard something like that. I would be really happy if I will find in Canada, except Jewish Family Service Agency, which I joined an organization 16 years ago, I didn't have family here, and maybe I would have it, even I feel that Jewish Nation is already my family.
Well, I have sent out right through my family to see how we're related.
Yeah, and I would like to ask you, why you, Rocky, decided to be a rabbi one day?
Well, you know, I was raised by my grandfather, and mm-hmm. my grandfather was very instrumental in many of the things that happened in early Judaism coming to Canada. He came to Canada in 1882.
From
Russia, and he was the first Jewish lawyer to graduate from the University of Manitoba. He founded the Zionist organization in Canada. He was a friend of Ben-Gurion. He was particularly... he won a case against the Tsar of Russia about Russian immigrants, and he was very, very passionate about the freedom that the Jewish people from Russia should have in Canada, and even more so, he was very, very passionate about getting the community to understand that these people came, these tribal members of ours, these relatives, these kinsmen, they came to Canada for a better life and not to have Russia all over again, not to give up their identity. And it was very important to him that the Russian Jews keep their identity, but it was really important for them to realize that they were Canadians now.
Uh-huh. But, Rocky, when you say that it was for your father... Grandfather been very important to keep his Russian identity. May I ask you why?
Yes, because he felt that while we were the Hebrews, the people who had left and exodus and diaspora from Israel over time, He felt that where we had stopped on our way was also who we had become. It wasn't only who we had become, so we weren't all to learn Russian because that they had come from Russia. We actually weren't allowed to learn Yiddish because for the same reason. But it became very important for us to remember that there were countries that we had passed through, that we had lived in, that we had adopted their customs of. And, you know, when I went to Moscow, I was there twice. In 2 years, I was invited to be a guest.
2 years ago?
2 years ago, and 2 years before that as well, in St. Petersburg and several of those small communities, I noticed that when I was on the streets, I felt like home in a different kind of way. So many faces just resonated with my family, and so many accents were the accents, you know, that I had heard all of my life through the Jewish people, through the immigrants from Eastern Europe. And I loved going to Russia. I thought it was amazing. But I love that I live in Canada even more.
But Rocky, I want to ask you something. You just mentioned that when you've been in Russia, Russia, Moscow, you really like it, but you said that you like it so much, but you like that you live in Canada. I would like to ask you why.
Well, it's part of the reason that I became a rabbi. Because in Canada, one has the possibility, hopefully, of living out all of the dreams of our grandparents and our great-grandparents, our parents, maybe even us, who immigrated into this country because where we lived was the most difficult of times for being Jewish. And so it became very essential for us to find our way. And the only way to find our way is to bind together as a community. And to bind together as a community, you need someone who understands how to convince people to appreciate what is instead of minding what isn't. And having come from some place like that has shtetls, that has prejudice and racism, we want to be grateful and thankful for the privilege that we have, although it brings us the responsibility of being good citizens. We want to really remember that. So I wanted to be a rabbi because I wanted to help people remember that in order to get to next year in Jerusalem, you really had to find your community first. And before you found your community, you had to find your sense of passion with God or the divine mystery. And before you could even get there, you had to really come to terms with yourself and what you mm-hmm. believed in. So I wanted to help people understand that the basic core beliefs of Judaism would just serve so well anytime.
Rabbi Rocky, may I name you Rocky?
Yes, please.
Rocky, in your synagogue here,
yes.
Do you have any Russian-speaking people who come to your synagogue, to your shul?
Well, you have to understand that I do not have my own synagogue because I'm not a congregational rabbi.
Uh-huh. So in your education,
in my education and in my speaking, I speak to many people who are Russian Jews because I speak in a lot of old folks' homes. I speak in a lot of synagogues. I speak in a lot of schools, and I do a lot of hospital work.
Did you meet any Russian-speaking Jew here in Vancouver?
Have I met any Russian-speaking? Yes, as a matter of fact, I have.
Yeah,
I have.
Do you like them?
Absolutely. Not only do I like them, I like the spirit of courage of picking yourself up from a life way over there and coming over here and hoping for the privilege, you know, of taking on this life that their forefathers have gone to so much difficulty to build a clearer path to mm-hmm. freedom and justice and a life that everybody should be entitled to live.
Yeah, okay. You have a very great, I'm not talking about your religious education. You have another education, right?
Yes,
Are you a psychiatrist? No, you're a psychologist.
Right? I'm a counselor. In the rabbinical world, I'm a Megiddic rabbi, which means that I am inspirational speaker, preacher of parables, speaker of stories, carrying of the ancient world, using stories as healing. So the kind of rabbi I am is what you would call itinerant. I am where people need me. Mm-hmm. And I am most amazed that God put me, or them, or us, right in the space where the work needs to be done.
For my understanding, to be rabbi, except that you are doing as a counselor, as a psychologist, it's so much responsibility. And you decided to take this responsibility. This is responsibility. Make your life easier or more difficult?
Well, in the beginning, it made my life more difficult because there was so much to learn and so much to take on. And, you know, three new stories every night just to become an ordained Magi, never mind to become a rabbi, never mind to become an ordained interfaith rabbi as well. I mean, I really went the distance, so there was a lot of studying to do for a 60-year-old woman. And in the end, though, all of it served me so incredibly because it gave me access to a part of Judaism that I really hadn't paid so much attention to, the back door, the mm-hmm. spiritual door, the Kabbalah, the part that really tries to explain the mystery, although it's so mysterious. How can you explain it? It wouldn't be a mystery if you could explain it, you know? Yeah. So it becomes very difficult in actual fact to talk about these things. You know, you have to sort of move around them delicately because people have different ideas of what spirituality is.
Okay, I would like to ask you something that might be a little bit provocative, but it's not.
Okay.
We are immigrants, have an idea that Canadian people they're not so exciting about our coming here. They don't have to, but at the same time, we have in our mind, I'm not talking about myself, but in immigrant in general, when we come to the country, we think that we are good enough to be not maybe equal, but maybe equal, but we just think that we have to be welcome. Why we have to think that we have to be welcome, I don't know. It's just in the mind, because we think that we bring our education, our skills, and everything. Sometimes we feel that we are, sometimes not. You are the second time in the program, and it's your initiative to come the second time and to share as your rabbi skills, your personal skills with us in prior the Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And may I ask you why?
Why will I come here to
why
speak?
Why you feel that you would like to you would like us to have your unique experience and your skills, because as I said before, when we talked about a couple of minutes ago before they came to the studio, I said that I never seen in my life a rabbi, in a real one, when I used to live in the Soviet Union. And if you ask me if I would have in my mind that it can happen with me, absolutely not. And when I saw the first rabbi in Canada, I even would like to touch him to be sure that he is the real one, because to came from before the Soviet USSR, from the Soviet Union, when you can't speak loudly that you are a Jew, that's something, the gift that I would never, ever can get in my life.
Well, you know, the word rabbi simply means teacher. That's really what it means. And until a few hundred years ago, congregational rabbis, as you and I would call them, only ever gave two speeches a year. The work was done in the yeshiva. The work was done in the study groups. It was a congregational effort. It wasn't that the rabbi was in charge. What I feel about rabbis is that rabbis as teachers have the great possibility of bringing the reality of every day and the greatness and overwhelmingness of the mystery together to allow people to understand that we are living both parts of that experience at the same time.
Right.
And I feel that immigrants, Russian or otherwise, from absolutely anywhere, I think that the difficulty in coming here is overwhelmingly rewarded by the immigrants who are willing to risk and put themselves out into the community to begin to learn the language of the country that they have immigrated
right.
to. And what I think is the great gift of Rosh Hashanah is Teshuvah, because Teshuvah allows us to look at the things in our past, decide how we feel about them, and if we're really wanting God to write us into that book of life, you know, after by Yom Kippur, then in this way of looking back, in this way of checking ourselves out. We have the advantage, if you want to call it that, of doing a little work on ourselves. And the work that we can really do, especially as immigrants, mm-hmm. but everybody, is to go and look at this baggage and say, do we really need to carry this anymore? Does it serve? And how do we move on without it? What can we do to stop this? It no longer serves. How do we redeem it? How do we repair it if it's a moment that we shouldn't need to carry on? So the great gift of Rosh Hashanah for an immigrant is that so many bad things came along on the boats and trains and planes with them. Yes, they got to leave the physical part behind, but you carry a lot with you. Rosh Hashanah, in the world of your friends, your tribe, your neighborhood, your relatives, your near and dear ones, you get a chance. All these prayers that you want to send to God to say, thank you for bringing me here, and now how can I help? Let me leave this old bad feeling behind, because it isn't going to do me any good and it can't change anything anyway.
Right.
So let's move on here. What a great gift. And in community, the energy of true compassion and true desire to make amends is just uplifted, sort of, you know, like they're trying to say about climate change, you know, how it's getting more exponential.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing is true when you walk into a synagogue and praying. You know, one person prays, two person prays, three person prays, and then you're up to, you know, 4, 5, 10, 20, 100. You have something going there. You have an energetic going that's just extraordinary. So if you have some people who are not so either good at praying or, you know, getting their feelings out, they are subsumed by this group effort, and somehow their prayers get to the floor on the wings of others. How good could that possibly be to have that opportunity?
Absolutely. But when you say that Rabbi is a teacher, you know, sometimes we say, this is teacher is good, this is not. This is Rabbi, I'm sorry, good is not. You know what I would like to say, that Rabbi Roki is good? Because when I ask you why you decided to come again, that you're welcoming, you're opening, you're expecting everybody. It doesn't matter from what country they come, how people, who they are, what their profession, age. For me, is a real teacher or rabbi is a person who never make any judgment, like with people around him or her, just unique expectation, but you have to be so big in your mind to be like you and understand like people around you, that if somebody asked me what rabbi should be, I would say it's Rabbi Roki, because it just...
What a sweet thing to say to
you.
Me,
just
Sasha.
Give me the feeling exactly that if I am a person from a former USSR would decide, do you would like to go to synagogue? I don't. Before the meeting with you, probably I would say no, because I came from the country, the my subject number one being atheism in university, in school, and every in the morning from tonight I see this propaganda, this is the best country in the world, the Soviet Union, only happy children in the Soviet Union, and then, you know, and such and such. That our meeting last time changed my life. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, you are very
And
Rocky,
I think you mentioned that, like, there are many, many lonely people, like immigrants, one of them. They don't know anybody. And I'm sure you have stories to tell when somebody comes to synagogue, he doesn't have anybody, he doesn't have friends or family. And because of synagogue, he finds new friends, he finds new family. And Rabbi probably is a member of the family.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a different little story, if you have a moment, that I would like to tell you. It's a combination of stories, actually. And they are holiday stories, particularly about Rosh Hashanah. In Rosh Hashanah, one of the things that we do is we blow the shofar, which is the sacred horns, and we blow them. It's very specific, the notes that you blow and how you blow them and everything like that. And it's just absolutely integral to the community. And there are several stories where a young boy or a young man would appear from the countryside. He'd never been in a synagogue. He'd never been exposed to formal prayer before, but somehow his father had brought him into the tabernacle, the synagogue, and he knew none of the words and none of the notes or anything. And he lifted his shofar from his pocket. He had his own, you know, for calling his sheep. And at an appropriate moment that he thought was an appropriate moment, he blew the shofar. And, of course, you know, his father was horrified and tried to grab it away from him. And the rabbi just looked up very interestingly. And his father said, no, no, no. And the whole time, the little boy got more aggravated and more anxious and everything. And he just was just beside himself. And finally, he just took the shofar out of his father's hands and he moved back and he just blew the final notes of the shofar for the ending of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, or the first prayers for Rosh Hashanah. And his father was just mortally embarrassed and at the end dragged him up to say to the rabbi that they were so sorry for his behavior. And the rabbi said, oh, sir, I want to thank you for bringing your son to synagogue today. Oh, my God, I don't know what I would have done. This Rosh Hashanah would have been a, let me just paraphrase, it would have been a total bust. It was going nowhere. And your son, the moment I heard him blow that first shofar, I knew God had sent me a miracle, but then you took him away. but you know, God. God knows best. So that little boy went and he did just what God wanted him to do. And did you hear? Did you hear the soulfulness? Did you hear the desire? Did you hear his love of God? It was right there. All those prayers of everybody else's that they could not get off the floor. Their kavanah was not there. They were thinking of their cell phones or something else. No, no, no. Here was this young boy, pure and sweet with his love and his desire to be a part of this. And what did he give us? He gave us the way. Just his simplicity, nothing else. So what does it take for Rosh Hashanah to be so wonderful? Yeah. It takes our intention for it to be just that.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Rocky, you know, the biggest mistake that we did today, we just realized, Pavel, myself, and all our audience, and Alex, that 30 minutes is not enough to spend time with you. We would like to say happy Rosh Hashanah for you and your family. We would be happy to see you again. I would like to say shalom to you, to all of us, and God bless that we have you in our life.
Thank you.
Toda rabah for having me here. Thank you so much. And I wish you all a very, very, very Shana Tova. May it go well with you the following year.
Thank you.
Sweet dreams.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.